I found that I wasn't really believed a lot of the time until I got my diagnosis. Mine actually doesn't show up on a genetic panel.
Genetics isn't always black and white, and the emotions and decisions surrounding genetics and genetic testing can be even more complex. Welcome to Patient Stories with Gray Genetics. I'm Eleanor Griffith, certified genetic counselor and the founder of Gray Genetics, an independent telehealth genetic counseling and consulting service. It seems like there are constantly headlines in the news about genetics, but few news stories focus on the patient experience. At Gray Genetics, we are collecting patient stories, your stories. Every other Tuesday, we bring you a patient story related to genetics. If you'd like to share your story, send an email to podcast@graygenetics.com.
In the past, I found that I wasn't being taken seriously by doctors. I have to do a lot of self-advocacy, putting up the boundaries and saying, hey, I can't do this because I'll get hurt.
This is Patient Stories. I'm Kelsey Crocker, a second-year genetic counseling student at Sarah Lawrence College, and I'm currently rotating at Gray Genetics. So Alex is currently a senior student at Sarah Lawrence College. Thank you for taking the time to share your story today, Alex. So you have Ehlers-Danlos. Did you want to tell us a bit about, you know, what that is and what that means to you?
Hi. I'm Alex. I have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, but more specifically hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which is a subtype of Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. They're all categorized by different symptoms and they have different effects. I am lucky to have one of the less severe subtypes. My symptoms would probably be categorized as mostly just joint instability and generalized hypermobility, which, in case you don't know what that means, my joints kind of are loose and my tendons don't really hold them together very well. So I'm prone to frequent dislocations.
Yeah. So how did you learn that you had Ehlers-Danlos?
So I actually was in tennis camp, and I had a sharp pain in my knee while I was playing, and I couldn't walk. So I ended up going to the hospital, and down the line after, you know, I ended up having that same injury again. I didn't really know what was going on. I had been told it was a dislocation. So I ended up going to at one point a doctor suggested I go to see a geneticist and genetic counselor. So I ended up scheduling an appointment, in which I had a genetic panel done, to test for the other subtypes. Mine actually doesn't show up on a genetic panel. So when they couldn't find anything, they still went through with the physical testing they could, which was assessing my hypermobility list, checking my symptoms off a list, basically.
So what was that experience like for you, like interacting with the genetic counselor, the geneticist?
It was helpful. I didn't really know what was going on. I didn't know why I was experiencing what I was experiencing, and explained a lot of other injuries and other things that have happened to me in my life and medically and that have been impacting me. So it was comforting to know that there wasn't something horribly wrong and that it was really just a disorder I didn't know about or understand.
Yeah. And Ehlers-Danlos is unique. Some conditions are like this, but that you can, outside, as you were explaining, outside of a genetic pathogenic variant or mutation found, you can also have the clinical criteria met and get the diagnosis. Yeah. Right. So since you've now have that diagnosis. What does that mean for you? How has it been in that sense of since you've had that?
It's been helpful. In the past, I found that I wasn't being taken seriously by doctors when I would go in for dislocation because of the frequency. And some of those locations were extremely unusual. Like a lot of people don't really present with multiple fingers dislocated or like a toe, an ankle, a wrist, a shoulder, especially in frequent succession. And so I found that I wasn't really believed a lot of the time until I got my diagnosis. And now that I have it on paper, I'm not questioned as heavily. Although there are definitely a lot of providers who don't necessarily believe in Ehlers-Danlos, since it's an invisible disorder to an extent, depending on what symptoms you're presenting with. And personally, I don't really, my dislocations always pop back into their sockets. So I wasn't really presenting with any visible issues. Whenever I would get an x-ray, they couldn't tell anything was wrong. And if anything, they could only see slight bruising on muscles surrounding the area and fluid buildup. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, okay. So you would say it was like helpful to receive the diagnosis. How did it impact like friendships, like family relationships?
Yeah, it was definitely helpful. It brought a lot of mental peace, I guess. In terms of my friendships and family, I think a lot of them did not really understand what was going on with me. And I don't think they really understand Ehlers-Danlos, even though they've been around me. Because again, it is invisible. So I just think that a lot of them don't know what I experience on a daily basis. And so sometimes when I'm not feeling well or I have an injury and it doesn't show, it's hard for them to have empathy sometimes with that. Like if we're at an outing and I trip over my ankle and injure it, or if something goes wrong, because I mean, unfortunately, my joints are loose enough that I could dislocate something just getting out of the car or turning around wrong. Or doing something without proper support. And so sometimes when I get injured in a split second like that, it's difficult to just pause plans if we're out doing something, or get a brace or support from a local CVS if we're out and about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sounds like you've dislocated, twisted a lot of things. I know there are some treatments like surgeries and that. Have you gone through with any treatments or had those discussions?
Yes. Yeah, so actually, before I got diagnosed, one doctor had offered a solution to my kneecap dislocations and my right knee specifically. But he suggested that I get my tendon strapped over my kneecap to prevent it from dislocating, which now that I know I have Ehlers-Danlos, it wouldn't have worked. And I would have gone through a lot of pain just to dislocate it again. And so I'm really glad I listened to my gut and didn't do that. But after, you know, learning about my disorder, which is another way it helped, I was able to research for myself. I looked at doctors that sort of specialized in hypermobile patients. I found a doctor, a surgeon at the Hospital for Special Surgery in Manhattan. And she was able to give me bilaterally, so on both legs. I had a TTO and MPFL surgery, which is essentially what they did was they moved my tibia up, they cut into it, moved it up to stabilize my kneecap, and then they cut out the tendon on the inside of my knee and replaced it with a donor tendon, which would help tremendously because since it's not my tendon, it's not as loose, so it's been able to hold my knees in place, and it was life-changing. I can play sports a little easier. I still injure myself way more frequently than other people do, and I have to be careful about how I use my other limbs, but before that I couldn't run, I couldn't jog, I couldn't even turn to get out of the car without slipping my kneecap out. So it really just changed everything. I know that's not the case for all Ehlers-Danlos patients who go through surgery, but I am personally glad I went through with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned earlier how kind of the first time you had a dislocation experience was with tennis. Was sports something that was, you know, a big part of your life, or like how has that shifted over time?
Yeah, I would say growing up, I definitely was a sports kid. I did softball and tennis and even fencing and all these other things. I liked staying active, and so it was definitely difficult to sort of have that ripped away from me after getting injured and getting a diagnosis, because I was told to only exercise in the pool because it was low stress on my extremities. And so I'd be less likely to dislocate things, which unfortunately I've still experienced dislocations in the pool, which is a little dangerous. But it was definitely emotionally difficult. And I was also relatively overweight growing up. And so another thing I would hear was that I should get more diet and exercise. And so a lot of my other doctors were pushing me to exercise, and yet I wasn't supposed to. So it was, I had to figure out how to exercise in a way where I wouldn't hurt myself, and I had to be extremely careful with what exercises I did, what machines I could use at the gym, because the wrong pressure in the wrong direction, if I used anything improperly, it would push something out of place. So it was definitely difficult, and I still have to be extremely careful. I used to dance as well, which I do miss dancing, but I'm still a little worried that if I were to jump back into it, I wouldn't be able to hold my joints in place. I think there's this weird push and pull where I'm extremely flexible because of the Ehlers-Danlos, but something that doesn't get mentioned a lot is that there's a lot of tightness that can sometimes be associated with that muscularly as well. And so some of my muscles are overcompensating for the fact that some other joints are not functioning as well. So my Achilles tendon is extremely tight because it was compensating for me not being able to use my knees as well as others. And so it's this weird, I'm tight, but I am stretchy going on.
Yeah. And I mean, you were describing getting almost conflicting, conflicting recommendations from different doctors. Have you found that's changed with the diagnosis? Has that made that part of it easier, or is it still conflicting?
Not really. I think a lot of doctors still don't understand Ehlers-Danlos, and so outside of the genetics realm. And so I still find myself having to explain that I can't do certain things when I walk into an office, and that I have to do a lot of self-advocacy, I found, in terms of just putting up boundaries and saying, hey, I can't do this, because I'll get hurt, or explaining other symptoms in relation to Ehlers-Danlos and saying, hey, this can't be, because sometimes I've had providers try to pin other issues I've had on Ehlers-Danlos when I know they're not related, for the most part, or I feel that they're not related. And so I'm definitely still, I take it a day at a time, but some days it's harder than others. Mm-hmm.
So you've shared a lot about, you know, Ehlers-Danlos and your experience. Is there anything that you'd like to say to someone who's listening, something that you learned through your journey that might be helpful to someone else?
Yeah, I definitely think, and this is specifically right now, at least this segment that I'm about to say, for people who do have Ehlers-Danlos, or doctors who are diagnosing other conditions, is that there are a lot of things that are interconnected with Ehlers-Danlos because it's a connective tissue disorder. And so some symptoms that are presenting might be due to related conditions, and that it really is something that affects the entire body. And connective tissue is everywhere. So it's your eyes, it's your mouth, like how you swallow. So sometimes EDS patients can have difficulty swallowing properly. Like it can just, it's total body. And I hope that in the future, there's a lot more evaluation of the body as a whole and how things are connected. And the other thing I want to say is that for someone who feels like they aren't being heard and they're not being taken seriously, find someone who will take you seriously if you can. Because sometimes it takes more than one person, more than one doctor to take you seriously. And especially for EDS patients, since there is not a lot of, again, physical manifestations, sometimes visibly, it's important to advocate for yourself and what you're feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great message. I actually met Alex in class. So, Alex, you're interested in being a genetic counselor, which is very cool. Alex is sitting in on one of my genetic counseling elective classes called Gestalts at Sarah Lawrence College. How do you find Gestalt, Alex?
Oh, I really enjoy it. I think it's interesting hearing about a bunch of different conditions, and especially we get to analyze them from a patient perspective and from a genetic counseling perspective. So it's interesting to look at a disorder from both angles and try to understand what the patient's going through and what it's like to diagnose that patient and what it's like to tell them what's going on and how to support them. So I find it fascinating. Really glad I decided to take it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's probably my favorite course I've taken in genetic counseling to this point. And, you know, it's really interesting because, as you're saying, we explore, you know, genetics, genetic illnesses, conditions, and just the profession of genetic counseling through like books, films, other media. So it's really cool. I like it too. So what drew you to genetic counseling?
You know, it's hard to pin it on a specific thing. I've always liked science and biology, but I think after going through my own diagnosis, there's so many things out there and there's so many people who are kind of lost and don't really understand what they're going through. And so I really would love to help those people just understand their bodies better, understand what's going on, just clarify things. And I also find it interesting. I mean, there's so much that's new about genetics, and it's constantly growing at this point. So I like things that are constantly evolving and changing, and I don't think it'll ever get old. It's going to be around for years to come. So I'm sure we'll only discover more about it. And I personally cannot wait to watch that happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as someone with a genetic condition who's interested in genetic counseling, what aspect of genetic counseling is most important to you?
It's interesting because I think partially since I don't have a gene linked to the symptoms I'm experiencing, I would love to research that kind of thing. And I'd love to look more into why there isn't a genetic link and how it's inherited, because right now there's so little information about some of those disorders. We know they're genetically passed down, but how and why and what gene? So I'd really love to explore that kind of thing. And I also would, as I've mentioned, I think medicine is so, it's important to look at the whole picture and all of the symptoms that someone's experiencing. So I'd love to research what's interconnected, essentially. Look at the things that are connected to genetics that don't seem connected on the surface to genetics, as I mentioned. And there are other disorders, which I don't think I mentioned this before, associated with Ehlers-Danlos. And one of the ones I'm particularly interested in, and I suspect I have, is mast cell activation syndrome. And there are a lot of symptoms, but one that I've personally experienced is random allergies. And so I've, you know, eaten mint, which is not really a true allergen, and broken out into hives, or I've eaten a burger and that I've eaten 100 times before and gotten rashes and my throat started closing up. So it's really random. They don't know what triggers it. They suspect it has something to do with histamines. But it's associated with a lot of people who have Ehlers-Danlos sometimes will have a disorder like that accompanying it. And so I think overlaps like that, I mean, that's in a whole different genre of medicine, in immunology. And so I think it's really interesting how much they overlap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it sounds like, maybe I'll end up in industry research, that sort of realm, which is really cool. And just one like broader question. Is there anything that strikes you right now as something we could improve on in the genetic counseling field?
That's a hard one to answer. I definitely think that when I went to get diagnosed, the genetic counselor that I saw, they believed me and what I was going through, but I still saw some skepticism because, again, my disorder didn't have, the subtype of the disorder I have didn't have a, it didn't show up on the genetic panel. So even though it is technically a genetic disorder and it can be inherited because the subtype didn't show up, they still didn't really, there was some apprehension in diagnosing me in the first place. And so I think, and I understand not wanting to throw around that diagnosis because it is so serious, but I definitely think, I wish I had felt like I was believed, I guess. So,
Patient Stories is an ad-free podcast and is unaffiliated with any genetic testing laboratories. We would like to keep it that way. To support the podcast with a donation, visit graygenetics.com/podcast/donate. If you would like to dig deeper into the professional issues raised by these patient stories, for $5 a month, you can join the Patient Stories Club. To sign up, look for the link in the podcast notes for this episode or visit graygenetics.com/podcast.
The information contained in this podcast does not constitute medical advice and is also not a substitute for genetic counseling. Neither Gray Genetics nor any of its guests makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Evaluation of an individual's personal and family health history is a crucial part of genetic counseling and any recommendation.